Welcome, this is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight, I thought we'd do a show that's, for a lot of people, I guess, science fiction, although it won't be, I hope, by the end of our hour. And that is the metaphysics of time travel. And I'm going to reveal some things. Now, I've written, of course, a number of articles about time. And I wrote in a book metaphysics in general about time, dealing with all elements of it, you might say. And so I thought I would talk tonight specifically about time travel because it is this subject which I think fascinates people, although there are many complications in it. There's a thing called the temporal paradox and all kinds of goofy things that can happen if you start to entertain the idea of time travel. And we'll talk about those as well. If you are interested in this subject and you would like to communicate with me while we're on the air, you can reach me, if you're in the U.S., through 877-876-5227. For those of you in Canada, try 888-815-9756. Okay, so what do we mean, first of all, by time? Because a lot of people think time is something that a clock does, you know, it keeps beats or something. And ever since about 1905, time has been thought of, because of a thing called special relativity, as a part of space by most so-called scientists and particularly physicists. And that isn't too far off, except there are some inherent problems, even to the present day, in the theories that deal with time. And although much of what Albert Einstein said, inclusive in his special relativity theory, has held up, there are also parts of it that have not. And there are, even to his own chagrin, issues in it that sometimes were perplexing, especially dealing with something called quantum physics, quantum mechanics, quantum field theory. It has become even more troublesome to try to understand time strictly through what is known as a standard model, or really what I call just Einsteinian physics, and to try to get a grasp on it. Now, for those of you who may have been watching some of the shows on this that are on cable or on satellite, they're fascinating. I love shows that deal with the idea of time and also discuss concepts going back in time to Einsteinian special relativity theories, etc. The problem with these shows is that they don't really deal, usually don't deal, with the complexities and the problems of both special relativity itself and time travel specifically. Now, you should know that in Einstein's theories, he believed that time travel was actually possible. A lot of people think the opposite, but he actually believed it was possible. He suggested a couple of ways. One of them had to do with the concept of something they didn't know about in any proven way, which dealt with black holes and also wormholes. They're kind of different kind of holes, but they what they do is they distort the time and space continuum, which is like a fabric. Think of it as like a big fabric that our universe is stuck onto. And they can actually puncture straight through this fabric to what other people don't know exists, which is in reality other dimensions of time and space. But I'm adding that in there. That's not necessarily what Einstein said. And especially in a wormhole, you can kind of like sneak across time and space and take a shortcut, like taking a piece of paper and folding it. And on one side of the paper, you got one side of a universe, and the other side of the paper, you got the other side of the universe. But when you fold them, they're right next to each other. And you invent a tunnel that goes right through the two places, and sure enough, you can go across the entire universe by walking across somebody's living room or something like that. Not so easy to do. And if you can really do this, by the way, then you could actually go back in time, because in theory, you could leave someplace, arrive someplace, I should say, before you actually left, as far as time is concerned. So some weird things can start taking place. There's a real big problem in something called a temporal paradox in time. And let me explain that. And you probably don't hear about this very much unless you watch Doctor Who. You know, it's like an English science fiction show about a guy who's a time traveler. And a master at it, by the way. Supposed to be very, very adept at time. But at any rate, let's get on to the question of what a temporal paradox is. And that's where one example of this is you go back in time. And you meet your grandfather, and you don't like him or something, and you knock him off. Well, the problem with that issue is if you did go back in time and did that, then you couldn't have been born to have gone back in time and killed your grandfather ad infinitum. You can see that there's a paradox there. The paradox means there are two statements that seem to support each other, but they are certainly contradictory in some way. So that's exactly what you got here. So that's what they call it, a paradox. And a temporal means just a time. Think of it as a time paradox. So basically, that's what's going on. You're messing up the concept of what time is supposed to be, and things don't have causality anymore. Causality means that this creates that, which then creates something else. And if this first thing didn't exist, then how can the last thing exist, kind of thing? And that's the problem. One of the problems with time travel is if you can go back in time, well, then obviously some things could get changed that create these kinds of temporal paradoxes. You can also have what are known as time loops and time discrepancies. You can have other kinds of contradictions in time other than the paradox one. And so ultimately, you can have all these things that can go wrong by being able to go back in time, even though time travel is supposed to be possible. And as far as going forward in time, that has some other interesting wrinkles in it as well, which we'll get to a little later. But I'm going to kind of stay in the past right now. It's a little bit easier sometimes to understand that than actually the future. But let's talk about what time is. I love this part. This is what I've written in a textbook, by the way, called Life's Hidden Meaning. And if you want to know more about this, there's a whole chapter in there about time and space, and I think it's very helpful to read that, although extremely difficult for some people, because it's one of those chapters that really is more physics than metaphysics in some ways, and for people who don't have the scientific kind of mind, it may trouble them. It isn't the kind that, where it's narrative and talking about what people used to be like or something. Those chapters are easier for people who have a more, we'll say, artistic approach to life. At any rate, if you are scientific, it's a great chapter to read, and it's only like 30-some-odd pages in the book, which is great because you get a lot in a short time of reading it. Okay, enough plugs for the book. Let's go on. What is time? Time is a part of a dimension. When it is in the dimension of time and space we presently exist in. That's the physical and the electromagnetic part of the physical dimension. We all are living in it right now. And within this dimension, time exists, but only as a part of the dimension, and not a complete dimension in its own right. As a matter of fact, it tags along with another part of the dimension called space. Okay. And that's the reason they call it space-time or time-space continuum, because it's kind of connected and it can't exist on its own in its own way. It has to always be a part of space. And if you didn't know that before, you do now, because I'm telling it to you. I'll explain it in more detail in a minute, but for many people, they've already heard this, and so this may not surprise them. But did you ever think about this? If time can only exist, truly, as a component of space, then it is not a complete dimension, as Einstein suggested it might be, or the fourth dimension. It's really not. We get a piece of time, that means, because the full dimension of time would have to be a dimension that could exist on its own without being literally pigtailed onto space every place you go. You can't find time unless you have space. And until there was something creating space. There was no time in this particular dimension that we live. That also makes Einstein's theory a little bit shaky, because his theory is that time is actually the fourth dimension, but it is not. He's counting the three dimensions, height, width, and depth of space, and then sticking on the fourth dimension of time as though it is completely universally accepted by his own thought and by other people accepting that, it is a dimension unto itself. It does exist in that way, but not here. Not in the dimension of time and space that we are living in right now, the physical dimension. That's the rub. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean to us in terms of trying to even get a handle on what time is? And what is time like here in comparison to other places if here, in this dimension of time and space, it's so incomplete? And I'm going to tell you how incomplete it is just momentarily. But what does it mean to us in terms of our life? Well, time has a very specific aspect in terms of the reality of consciousness. So when we think of ourselves as existing within the dimension of time, and the time is really truncated or not fully developed, our perspective of ourselves, our own consciousness, is faulty and misleading. And so we misperceive who we are, what we are, and who and what everything else around us is, and how interactions take place within our environment. Let me give you an example of this. In Einsteinian physics, and this is about our own realm now, this is in the theoretical realm where we live. In Einsteinian physics, if you were, say, traveling at the speed of light, and you wanted to go a little faster, you can't do it. What does that mean in terms of time? What happens to time? Because time is how it's supposed to be, how you measure feet over distance, right? Isn't that one way we measure time? Well, that doesn't work in this realm, because guess what? You can't go faster than what we call the speed of light. So time has some obvious problems. It reaches a point where it slows down and slows down and slows down, and it finally stops technically at the speed of light. So there is no time going on. But there's also another problem. Let's say that you're going at the speed of light, and you're moving towards somebody else that's going at the speed of light. What do the two of you perceive? Well, for both of you, time has stopped, right? Think about that. And for both of you, you're each traveling at the speed of light, but neither one of you are adding any additional speed to the speed of the other one. What's happening to time in that model? Am I wrapping your head around, twisting your head around with this? Do you see that this has some real problems? Because obviously there's something wrong with the way we perceive time, even when we use Einsteinian physics. Now, if we get rid of Einsteinian physics, go back a few hundred years to Newtonian kinds of things, you know, time doesn't make any sense. Because, you know, if you ask somebody, well, what is time, and if they aren't familiar with modern-day physics, they have no real clue. They say, well, yeah, I don't know. You know, it's sort of like something that we move through or is happening at a consistent rate. But of course, now we know by Einsteinian physics that it's all relative, and it depends how fast you're moving, except if you're moving towards something that's moving at light, then it doesn't work. And if you're moving at the speed of light, which can't happen, by the way, then that also doesn't work, because there is no time. You get from here to there in no time at all. Okay, well, if you can be going places in no time at all, then what is time? Time is no time. All right. Am I getting you confused? I want you to be a little confused at this point, because I'm going to give you answers in a few minutes, and that's the fun part of my job here today, is to talk about these things and kind of have fun with you about it. But I, for those of you who have familiarity with Einsteinian physics and special relativity, I wonder if you've really thought about these things. because I mean these are the kinds of things that are the brain teasers that I don't know that physicists today really think about them, because they can have become accepted. It's sort of like, yeah, that's right, that's how it works. Well, why does it work that way? Well, I don't know. I learned it in college. That's how I got my PhD. Well, yeah, but you don't know why it's really like that. I mean, nobody knows that I've talked to, that's a physicist, the answers to these very basic questions. So I think it's important for us to now gain some better understanding. Are you ready? Here it comes. Yep. The wisdom is flowing. Maybe. Either that or I'm a nutcase. But either way, it's going to be interesting, right? Okay. First of all, imagine what our universe is like right now. We live on the skin of space-time. It's think of it as a fabric. I think literally like a fabric. And there is another thing that is involved with space-time, and that is activity, which comes in the form of, literally, the form of energy. So in this dimension of time and space, we can say that all activity is connected to some form of energy. Are you following? I hope so. Okay. And this energy literally is stuck on the surface of this fabric of space-time. When the energy moves over the fabric, okay, it does some interesting things to space-time. It literally can change the space-time. Yeah, the fabric is kind of flexible and it can and change it. The other thing it does is, even if it doesn't move, although everything technically is moving, but that's another story, and you'll see why everything is moving in a second, but let's say we take something like a planet and we stick it on this fabric of space-time, it makes a dimple, a dent in the space-time. And because it makes a dimple in it, it tends to move. Literally, it tends to roll around. And everything has some degree of effect. Even things that don't have mass, if they have some form of energy, because there are actually a couple of particles, like photons, they don't have real mass, but they have a form of energy, neutrinos. They actually still affect this space-time to some extent. There may be a particle, which we're going to talk about in a little while, called a tachyon, which doesn't affect the space-time. But for right now, we're dealing with the particles that have been agreed upon and exist. So everything that has an energy of any sort affects space-time. And the interesting thing about it is that although it's all in movement, the movement is having an effect on all other energy that is in movement. That's called interaction. And so the principle of this is that our whole universe is in constant interaction. It doesn't matter if the particles are zillions of miles apart. They actually have some effect on each other because the whole universe is kind of shaking, rocking, and rolling. And this produces an interesting effect. There's a thing in physics called locality. What that means is that something is affecting something else by somehow being in contact with it. And generally, a lot of physicists don't believe that things can be moved or changed without there being locality. That's part of this thing called a standard model. But the fact of the matter is that when you start talking about the wiggling and waggling of time-space, locality starts becoming pretty metaphysical and not so much direct contact as much as many people would like to think. Although, it still could be argued that there is locality, because even if you're on the other side of the universe and you're wiggling and waggling time-space, it's a time-space that is having an effect on energy someplace zillions of miles away. So you could still get away and say, yeah, it's locality that's happening. But the problem with this thing is that it appears to be true that locality has to obey the law of physics, and it can't go any faster than the speed of light as it exists in our universe. And guess what? It appears that this business about the wiggling of time space may happen at certain times, like at the beginning of our universe and other times, much, much faster than the speed of light. Now we get a problem. We got a big problem because this whole idea of everything being connected by something else doesn't work anymore. And time starts getting really, really screwed up because of that. It appears that the first few hundred thousand years, even, time was messed up. And it was certainly messed up for the first minutes to hours after the Big Bang, because everything was moving faster than the speed of light. It's called the inflation idea. And they know it's true. They know it actually happened. When I say they, I mean physicists and other people. But the problem is that nobody can really explain how it works. They just say, well, that's another thing that I learned in college, got my PhD learning, and now I accept it. Okay, so what does this all mean? Well, if you remember what I said a number of minutes ago, time is not whole. We don't have a whole dimension of time yet. We've got a piece of that dimension, and most of that piece of that dimension is really the past part of time. Now, this is going to be a little hard to understand, but time is really not what we think it is in terms of its own dimensionality. When it's whole, it's past, present, and future, and everything in between. It's a whole banana. But as we perceive time, because of the fact that time is not whole here, we're only able to perceive, and we're only able to measure time that has taken place already. We can't measure time as it's happening, and we can't measure time in the future. We can only really measure time in the past, and even that's a little difficult for us. So we've got a fraction of time here in this dimension of time and space. And this fraction of time causes us to have all the illusions that we have about our life, about other factors, and it reacts very strangely to a thing called gravity. Gravity actually is all the energy that is affecting the fabric of time-space. Remember, it's doing all these dimples and weird things to it. That gravity is doing that. What it really is the collective thought of a type of energy that causes time-space itself to be, we'll say, manipulated. It's what really causes the true, we'll say, big parts of time-space to become distorted. Now, other things besides gravity, electromagnetic forces, nuclear forces, can affect time-space. But gravity, even though it seems very weak right now, is actually a very strong force when things get very close together. So if you get into the question of black holes or even wormholes, where things are getting really, really tight in, and energy is really, really compressed, then it's extremely powerful, and it starts doing wacko things that are good things, by the way, to time-space. What it does is it allows that space and time that we exist in to start connecting to other time-space of other dimensions. This is a fascinating element to the whole thing. Well, then who has any answer for this? Well, there's a thing called string theory, and it's kind of a lot closer to the truth, but it's not exactly there. And that is that there's actually vibrational kinds of, we'll call them strings, but they're actually just vibrational effects on not only time and space, but also other dimensions, possibly. And these vibrations have a significant element to them. They actually create the dimensionality of things, and they make, in our sense, things that we think of as particles and energy, etc. Sort of true, but not really. The real answer is that there is these vibrations, but the vibrations are actually the thought of the creator and creators beyond us of our entire universe beyond the physical dimension. And so these vibrations are coming from thought itself. Hard to understand that, to realize. But that's really what's making everything. We think of it in terms of material outcomes, but in reality, it's how thought is choosing to be creative. And if it's creative in a way that's similar to the creator of our universe or other beings who function in similar ways, then we can call it spiritual thought. Interesting, interesting part. And the interaction part helps to develop the forms of life, gives diversity to life, and allows new things to be created in our universe that helps to grow all of us while it grows the creator and creators of themselves. The one creator grows and all other creators grow with that. Fantastic idea. Okay. How do we time travel? You notice how I moved us along, I guess, towards that? I want to do this before the break. I want to at least give you a little hint of it. In order to travel in time, there is a way to do it. There's a thing called, and now what I'm telling you right now, nobody knows. And yeah, I got to be careful I don't get in trouble telling too much of things that people don't know. And I'm going to say enough, and then others can try to work on this at some time in the future. The way to do this is through a thing called parts of quantum physics, a thing called non-locality, and I think I gotta remember the name. I'll get it. Schlödinger. Yeah, that's it. Schlödinger waves. And Schlödinger was, I think I got it right. Maybe. If I don't, you can call me and tell me. Schlödinger was a physicist in the 1920s, the late 20s, and he came up with a theory in quantum physics. And the theory was that there is other dimensions, effectively, to time and space that are more complete and bigger. He was right, by the way. And that sometimes, because of things going on outside of our continuum of time and space, super waves can be produced that are more powerful than anything in our universe. They're just huge. And it can happen in ways that are unexplainable in a mathematical sense. And I think it may be Schrodinger. That's it, Schrodinger waves. That's it, Schrodinger. Couldn't quite get that out. But anyway, today we now know that these things really happen because, weird as it may be, we have discovered this happening in the oceans of Earth. Sometimes all the energy surrounding like 100 miles of ocean moves in one direction at one time and creates super waves that are extremely dangerous because they're so powerful. They can literally cut entire ships, huge oil tankers, et cetera, apart and leave them in the dust. Well, you leave them in the ocean anyway. And destroy them. They have tremendous force. And this is a very, very, very small example of something that I'm going to explain of how you can use this effect to actually travel in time. But I'm going to do that when we come back from break, which is going to be in a few minutes, like 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Today we're talking about the metaphysics of time travel. And I was just talking with our engineer. We were talking about how to pronounce the name correctly, Schrodinger, whatever it is. I did the best I could pronouncing it tonight. But I think it's important to realize that his theories have never been disproven. They just haven't been necessarily accepted till very recently because of the wave effect found in our own oceans and some other things going on very far out in outer space. So now he suggested, and I think he was right because I know much more about the metaphysical realm, and I know there are other dimensions of time and space. Know it. I've been there, done that, as they say. And so these dimensions have greater... we'll call it, or more whole time to them. If you go to the astral realm, which is where people, when they die from here, they eventually end up living in the astral world. And in the astral world, not only is the past part of time represented, and much more whole, in a sense, than it is here, but the present part of time also exists at the same time. So you can measure both at the same time. And amazingly, in the astral world, non-locality is a real thing. So you can instantly go from one place to another, and most importantly, you can have great effects on things without having any direct contact or even indirect contact where you touch something and it touches something else. You can actually change things that are quite far at a distance. And this is what physicists really are worried about because that's a real metaphysical kind of thing. But in any rate, in order to really go back in time, I'm going to tell you how to do it now. Are you ready? All right. You've got to get to a place called the monastic dimension, where time has all three parts of itself represented. And if you do so, if you can get to that dimension of time and space, from that dimension, you can create one of these huge Schrodinger waves from that dimension. And you literally can write it in, and you have to do this somewhat through mental actions, not just physical, or not just some kind of machine or something. You have to actually be involved in the process. You can write it into the time space of either the astral or the physical world. And then you can go back to whatever time you want. You want to see some dinosaurs? You can go back and do it. You may think, is that why you're always talking about dinosaurs? You're going back and looking at them? I can't do it yet. I'm just telling you it's possible. Now, I can't do it. But I know in order to be able to do it, you have to be able to unify the spaces between the mental, astral, and the physical worlds. And you can't be a human being if you can do that. You have to be some of them better, bigger, greater than a human being. Yeah, they call them masters and all that stuff. But something like, you have to be able to do that. And I can't do that. So, but if you can do that, you literally can go back in time. And you could go to any part back in time that you want as far as the etheric physical world is concerned. Here is the catch. While you're doing this, you're part of this wave. And the wave is actually a quantum wave that falls outside, although the wave itself has some effect on the etheric physical part of the universe. It only has an effect on the part of the universe that it is that you are being brought into, and you cannot enact anything or do anything to change anything because the wave separates you from your existing time and space, which is in the mental world or higher, and the time and space of the etheric physical universe. It actually acts as a barrier, and it preserves something called causality. What does that mean? That means if you go back and you, let's say you've got superpowers, okay, you're going to be beyond the human, you're superhuman, and you decide to take a step back and you like to visit the T-Rex, you know, hey, listen, they're kind of cute, if, I guess, if you really think about it, they maybe are cute, but they certainly are fierce, you know. Anyway, you go back, you want to observe a T-Rex playing around with other T-Rexes and see what they're going to be doing. Maybe they have a family structure. We should check that out. Okay, so you go back and you want to watch the T-Rexes 66 million years ago. And you're on Earth, okay, or you go to Earth and do it. You may not come from Earth, but you can do this. You can go anywhere in the etheric physical universe part or the dimensional part of the universe. You can go anywhere you want in it. And you can do this because time-space is exactly that. You not only can move in time, you can also move in space and be any place you want to be using this wave, this huge, huge wave. Now, as soon as you get to Earth and you're looking at, you know, you're watching some T-Rexes in what used to be North America of sorts, and they're playing around, you're getting all the stuff, and it's really interesting. You can gather information. That's possible. Because the wave permits the allows information to go from one in one direction only, from because it induces a force on the time space and it allows information to come in one direction only, similar to what a black hole does, by the way, and it can flow to you, but nothing from you can go to it. So you cannot go and pet, you know, and say, oh, nice T-Rex, you know, maybe I'll teach it a few tricks. You can't do anything like that. Because the information and also the effect of energy and locality only goes in one direction, towards you. That's the way this wave is producing this effect. And it's fascinating because if you think about it, there could be others listening to me right now. They may be standing right next to me from 100 years from now or 1,000 years from now who have reached this super ability, and they may be listening to me, say, oh, he's the first guy that ever talked about it. Look at him. There he is. I'll wave to him. Hey, how you guys do it? They don't, you know, I don't really know they're there, but they could be, because I would have no way of having any contact with them. They would have contact with me. They could get information from me. They could be hearing everything I'm saying. They could be watching everything. They could even be maybe using a microscope, I mean, checking out my face or something, whatever. They could be doing anything they want to do, but they can't have a direct effect on me. So the causality of events cannot change. In other words, whatever they do, since it can't affect me, can't change them or anything in the future. But they certainly can gain from me information. And that's an interesting thing, because that would have an effect on them and their time spectrum, especially when they return to the future, because now they can say, hey, we know what this guy looked like. We know who he was and what he said. They are adding to the future from the past, but they are not being changed. In other words, their genes aren't going to change because they did something weird to me that then had some effect on others and who knows whatever. Nothing's going to change like that, because there's this wave that is totally blocking anything from coming through. Now, the interesting thing is this wave is also affecting some black holes, like the black holes that are called supermassive black holes in galaxies. They actually are generating, in other dimensions of time and space, waves that are coming back and forth, but they also are one-directional. So in other words, what goes through them, once it truly goes through, it isn't thrown out. Some stuff actually gets thrown out, and it becomes like super beams of gamma rays and other stuff. The stuff that actually goes through them is gone, and I mean gone. And it's information, and it's whatever else, and it's just gone. But remember this. Remember this, that even the information that is going over is more or less, depending upon how you want to look at it, still present from the reality of those that are here. In other words, It's the same thing if you fall into a black hole. Your reality is that you're never really getting to where you're supposed to be going. And so, interestingly, there are all kinds of contradictions still going on in these weird things that we call black holes, etc. But nonetheless, it is possible to go back in time and to actually observe and actually, we'll say, study what has taken place, but you can't make changes. You can't change the causality of events because the Schrodinger wave is between you and whatever exists, and it's more powerful than anything that exists in, on this side of things. So nothing can make a difference as far as our reality is concerned. Amazing stuff. Just amazing stuff. Now, what does it do to time-space? It does have an effect on time-space, and this is the interesting thing. While it doesn't change the effect on the way that energy is dimpling or changing time-space, per se, it does have an effect on time-space in some ways, and let me explain that. Every time one of these waves comes through, it is creating greater levels of organization. Now, this sounds really strange because everybody thinks that quantum mechanics and anything that's quantum physics is like chaotic. It does the reverse. It's actually organizing. So there is an effect, we could call it, on time space of greater levels of organization. Now, what does that exactly mean? It means that others coming and visiting us for time travel would actually slightly improve, very, very slightly improve, the organizational factors of interactions between anything in time-space, making it a little bit better. Time might actually improve in terms of its fracturing nature rather than to unimprove. But this is the interesting thing. Those beings who choose to do this would only do it rarely because they don't want to alter too much of our ability to suffer the consequences of fractured time, because we're supposed to be putting it together ourselves. Once in a while, though, there may be some help coming from this very effect. In other words, not only does someone come back and they get great information, but they may make it a little easier for all of us struggling in this dimension of time and space to be able to interact together, to be able to understand time a little better, and to be able to function in time better. And that's a real complicated thing. I can't go too much further in it because I would have to reveal a few more things than I probably should be doing right now. But at any rate, so the fascinating thing is we can go back in time and we can observe if we have the ability to unify the three dimensions of time and space, mental, astral, and sort of physical, at one time using our own bodies, minds, and senses, and then ride this incredible wave that we will create that allows us to do this sort of time travel, we'll call it. Okay, now, what about people who live in the mental world? People who live in the mental world live in the whole part of time. I'm skipping the astral because we don't have enough time tonight to go into each piece. But they live in a whole part of time. And the interesting thing with them is that they actually can not only experience the past, which they do, by the way, they can also experience, obviously, the present and the future parts of time. And when they experience the whole part of time, which means that they have their senses well-developed mentally and they're not damaged, like from being too egotistical, they can fix them over a lot of, we'll call it, work on themselves. But once they get to the point where they're functioning pretty good in the mental world, it's possible to create future scenarios that are probabilistic scenarios. It's not the real future, because the real future is always created. It's created in the time and space of the mental world, or time space of like the physical world, which is a joined part. But it's created through interactions. But it can be pre-created. Recreated being probabilistically created by people in real time, in the present time, and using elements from what they know of the past to create scenarios of how things are likely to happen. And then while they're doing this, they can actually create all of the functional elements of what the world will be like as they interact together. And so we'll call it like a virtual future reality, but it isn't like here, where virtual would just be like more or less not truly fully being there, but it would be kind of like, you know, sort of in between, where you kind of sense things but you really don't, and you're in this digital world that we make believe in. But this would be actually like really being there, except it's still probabilistic future, meaning that when they choose to end it, it just evaporates. It goes away. It's ephemeral, and it just leaves. And they can create many of these so that they can function together very much as souls, because souls do this as well in the higher mental world. We were talking about people doing it in the lower mental world. And when they do it, they go through scenarios to sometimes determine how these circumstances are best developed by creating new personalities in people that will interact and be born around the same time together. And who is going to do what with whom, and what kind of results they might expect. Remember, everything is still probabilistic, because in the real future, which will be the present and past at some point, those people that actually do that sort of thing have free choice, and they could choose to do something different than is the likely or probable things that are thought of, because it's so intensely complicated. No matter how advanced these people are thinking of, and how many iterations they use of creating the future possibilities, there's always room for changes and for something else to happen. They're getting an approximation of what is the best personality for each one of hundreds, maybe even more, of these people and then souls to eventually develop as incarnates. And they do other experiments too. That's the most common use of this methodology. Fascinating. And they get to live out future realities that are pretty close, but not exactly, of what is going to be the future. Now, again, it isn't the exact future, and it doesn't change the past, and it doesn't make the future. It just helps to make the future by giving these people and or beings being our souls, valuable information that allows them to customize and tailor how to best create together as a unit. Even though each one is providing individual input, they're adjusting so they get the best results they can for the whole, sort of like one for all and all for one kind of thing. And so that's how it's used frequently. But you can't do this if you don't live in a whole part of time. If you only live like we do in a part of the past, it's not possible for us to create these realities. They create them with just their thought and their senses. It's impossible for us to do that, because time is not whole enough here, and our thought and senses are way too weak. Both of those are conditions that produce for us some unfortunately limiting results. But nonetheless, it is possible, therefore, to sort of time travel into the future if you're in the right dimension of time and space. Even if you're not a superhuman yet, even if you're not fully joined with your soul yet, you can live some of that, and all of us will have that opportunity, if we so choose, to live our lives in ways in which we can get to that point while we live in the mental world. So that's another fascinating possibility that I love. And so there are really two ways to deal with time travel. One is as a, we'll call it the future potential, which may be almost an infinite number of possibilities. It's not parallel universes. Don't get confused with that. And by the way, parallel universes do not exist within our whole dimensional universe, because in order for our universe to exist, the thought of its creator limits certain elements. And one of those elements is that there just can't be chaotic, infinite universes. Instead, there is a design, we'll say, and a reason for the universe, which is to grow more of life, which is the growth of its own creator as well. And each one of us will enjoy eventually becoming greater, much greater beings than who we are. Eventually, we ourselves can develop ourselves to become godlike. So it's all possible. It's a great, great system. I love it. Okay. So, and then on the other side of the fence, to sum up, I guess, because we're really out of time here, we can go back in time. I know that that's an amazing reality. And there may be people, beings around us right now, who have gone, come back in time and are observing us, and we would not know it. Because we're separated by a super strong type of wave that allows only one directional type of information moving and only has a moderate effect on us. And that moderate effect is to make things a little easier, actually. It makes our time a little better, but it doesn't change any physical realities. So there's no causality changes. No strong causality changes. Because technically, even if you move time and space a little bit, make it a little easier by organizing a little bit more, you are slightly changing causality. But those that have this ability are careful not to upset causality too much by making it too easy for those of us who are struggling. I know you say, well, why don't I make it really easy for me? Heck, I want it. Well, yeah, but see, part of the struggle is also the growth. And we're here to grow, and we're here to grow more, not only of ourselves, but of God itself and all of life. So if we're going to do it, we can't be disturbed too much, because if we do that, then it might affect the future and the beings that are even coming back to watch us. You got to see, you can see how even that has some element of causality to it, and you got to be careful. But you can't specifically go and do the paradoxes that I talked about. The temporal paradoxes of matter cannot be affected, which is good. Because if we could go back in time and change things, we would have already done it and probably ended the universe. And that would not be a very good thing. I would prefer that we'd never be able to travel in time if we're going to really screw things up the way we screwed up everything else so far, at least in this world. And, of course, worlds like Earth are not capable, humans are not capable, of traveling in time because they can't be responsible enough yet. But maybe from our future, even on this world, or possibly from some other world, we have visitors listening to me right now and watching me, or watching you as you listen to me. Isn't that a fascinating thing? Okay, I hope that this has made some sense. Now, I covered a huge amount of territory here. Again, if you go to Life's Hidden Meaning and you read Chapter 10, I think a lot of this will make a lot more sense. I hope it would. There's also, in the book I wrote, Afterlife Love, there's bits and pieces of this in there, and there's more realistic kinds of interactions between people that show how it works. Also, I've written some interesting articles. One of them was called Cycles in Time, that really even further elaborates on issues about time and potentially time travel. So you might be interested in that as well. Okay, I do want to mention that if you happen to be in the Mesa area, that's a part of Phoenix, the metropolitan Phoenix, you can hear Mimi talk on the Astral Realm, and it's all the way in March. I'll just say very quickly, March 16th from 7 to 8:15 p.m. Go visit her if you would like. I want to also bring our attention to a very important thing, and that is this Sunday will be my last show on WDIS radio, AM radio, because I did it for a year and a half, and it's time to kind of move on, and they think so too, I guess. And we're looking for a little bigger venue, some kind of a bigger audience possibly, but to do this, some more of Why Like This. And I'll let you know as that happens. And if you have any ideas, please let me know if you know of this place you would like us to be. Besides here, we're not giving a BBS, so we're going to continue on for sure. But this is in addition to. So if you have something about that, let me know. I'm very interested in hearing about that. And that's 1170 AM or WDISAM.com, and it's going to be from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And that's this Sunday, and it's going to be the last show. So please tune in. We are out of time for right now. So I hope this show has made some difference. And until next week, this has been Miles McFlower for Why Life Is.